Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Biblical Woman Podcast. I'm Kat.
And I'm Nicole. And today, let me tell you guys, we have quite the topic for you. Today, we are going to be talking about how to talk to our kids about sex. So Kat and I needed to bring in somebody for this episode to help us out. So I am happy to introduce our guest today. Today we have with us my friend and fellow podcaster, Julie Rupp. Julie graduated from Huntington University in 2005 with a degree in music education. And sidebar, this is where Julie and I met because we were teammates on the cross country team together. But I also knew Julie because she was the girlfriend of one of my good guy friends, Todd Rupp. And she and Todd have now been married for 17 and a half years, and they have two children, ages 12 and 10. And Julie is the creator and host of the Parenting Tomorrow's Leaders podcast, and she's currently a lead instructor for Alive and Well, a program within the public schools that teaches on topics such as abstinence, abusive relationships, mental health, and a myriad of topics related to these. She has been with Alive and Well for 5 years and is serving in her third year as a full-time instructor. When she's not at her job or running her kids around, she enjoys visiting the same store multiple times in one day on account of her perpetual forgetfulness. So welcome, Julie.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt like maybe there was some people in your audience that could relate to my going to the store multiple times in one day because you don't have your list, or like, oh, I forgot to get the milk that I was supposed to pick up, or I don't know, maybe something like that, that people are like, oh, I'm not the only crazy person that does something like that.
Well, I loved that. So we are so excited to have you with us today and just to help us just discuss this topic and give us your insights. And I know with your experience, both with your own podcast and with your job, you have learned so much and you have so much to share with us. So as we start, I guess just tell us a little bit more about Alive and Well and what drew you to that organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, as you said, I've been with Alive and Well for 5 years. I was a part-time instructor for 2 years, and then I moved to full-time 3 years ago. And I first found out about this organization from a missions fair that our church was having. And my husband was actually running the missions fair, and he was like, you gotta meet these ladies. They're running this organization that teaches abstinence in the public schools. And I knew from, my husband was a youth pastor for 10 years. And whenever someone came that was a guest of one of our regular students in the youth group, and they came for, you know, the sex talk or whatever that we would have with the youth group every year, I was shocked how many high school girls, because that's who I talked to, is the girls, had never in their life had anyone tell them that abstinence was even an option. And it kind of broke my heart because it was like, man, the standard is so low that these girls, it's not even like you have a goal of abstinence and then you make a mistake. It's like, you don't even have a goal to do that. And so then what are you going to get yourself into if your goal is set so low, you know? And so when I found out that they were allowed to go into the public schools and teach teenagers, hey, you don't have to do it the way the movies do. You don't have to make the same mistakes you see your parents making, and explain to them that a lot of times healthy relationships is having healthy respect for yourself and your own body and your boundaries. And if the person you're dating isn't going to respect your boundaries, they're not respecting you as a person. And like, your physical boundaries is a way to know whether or not a person's going to respect you. And one of the things I love that we talk about is when you're born with your brain and your body, and you have a choice of when you get to give your body to another person. And then we also talk about abuse and say, you know, abstinence has nothing to do with abuse, because abuse is somebody taking advantage of you, but your abstinence is your choice that you get to choose when you willingly give your body to another person. And what better way to know someone respects you than if before you give them your body, they've devoted their life to you. You know, like, oh, I can trust this person with my body because they've trusted their life with me, you know? And so just teaching them that, and I tell the students, I know not every single one of you is going to agree with abstinence, but just helping them to see that there is that choice out there available to them was really exciting to me. My husband, Todd, and I were high school sweethearts. And so we dated for 6 years before we got married. Aww. And I see, yes, I know. Isn't that fun?
So sweet.
I know. And I see now we've been married for 17 and a half years. And I see through a lot of my friends' relationships, how our marriage was drastically different from day one, simply because we chose abstinence. And it was like our relationship had a completely different foundation than people's relationships who hadn't chosen abstinence. And I've even talked to some of my friends who didn't choose abstinence, and they have like trauma based off of sex. And because of that, they view sex as, oh, that was when I had sex, I was doing wrong things. And so now when they're married, they have a hard time enjoying their husband because they're mentally associating sex with their bad decisions. And I'm like, yeah, that's why you don't have sex before you're married, because then for the rest of your life, it's this awesome thing that you can just enjoy with your husband, you know, and with your spouse. And instead of having this, all of this trauma wrapped up with it, it can be just this beautiful thing that you can do together, you know? And we say in Alive and Well, like when you verbally commit to another person through your wedding, then you have a physical act that like emotionally binds you together, like through the wedding night, you know? And I just love that picture of just, and as a believer, I'm like, yeah, that's the way God designed it. You know, like he designed for us to wait until marriage, and he designed for us to become emotionally attached to this person through this physical act of having sex with one another. And so I think part of me loves teaching Alive and Well to teach people there is a choice of abstinence. Another part of me loves teaching Alive and Well to teach people that sex is not a bad thing, and that if you do it at the right, in the right way at the right time, that it can be a really enhancing thing that can really make your marriage great too. So yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing all of that, Julie. I know you're passionate about it. And I'm just sitting here, like listening to everything, just taking it in. And what a wonderful message for teenage girls to hear, you know, at that age, and just to recognize that, okay, this is an option. Like that kind of blew me away, just how you started with, you know, that they don't even understand that that's a choice that they could make, you know?
Right.
Just the fact that you're bringing that knowledge is just so great. And I'm really curious about two things. With that, with what you said, like one, I'm really curious about like, what are typically their reactions to the abstinence method? And do you also talk about, okay, if you have already made the choice to have sex, you can still choose to be abstinent until your wedding, you know, do you talk
yes.
about
that? Yes. Yes. We, in every class that we teach, cause we go in either 3, 5, or 8 sessions to every school that we're there. So we go in either 3, 5, or 8 times. And 3 times, we pretty much only talk about mental health. If we go 5 times, we talk about lots of different consequences that can happen in life. And in the 5 times, sex is always one of the days that we talk about, you know, of like sexual consequences or abstinence and things like that. And then the 8 sessions is like the 3 plus the 5 is what we do. And so when we go into the schools, anytime we talk about abstinence, we always talk about secondary abstinence as well. And anytime we talk about abstinence, we also talk about abuse and how to get help if you've been abused. We also talk about that abuse like doesn't have to define your future, and it doesn't take away your abstinence choice, and that's still you giving your body to another person isn't like, just because someone took advantage of you doesn't mean that you don't get that choice anymore in the future, that you can still have respect for yourself and things like that as well. And so, yes, we do teach about all of those things. I feel like there was something else you asked and I'm having troubles remembering what I didn't answer yet.
Yeah, just like how they responded. And then, but also if they have made that choice, just talking about like, okay, but you can make a different choice from now on.
Yes, absolutely. So responses, I mean, we live in Wells County and Wells County is very conservative. So there is a lot of parents that love our message, you know. There is also a lot of parents that think that teaching abstinence, which just is astonishing to me, they think it is terrible that we're teaching teenagers abstinence because instead they think we should be teaching them how to use a condom, to which I'm like, it's not very hard to figure out how to use a condom. Like, and if you teach them how to use a condom, you're basically just communicating, we know you're going to do this anyways, even though there's a better choice. And so we're just going to fold over and just admit that defeat, you know what I mean? I'm like, why wouldn't we just start with the ideal and start with the best choice? And then knowing that not every person's going to choose. And that's one of the things we talk about as well, is that it's your life. You get to choose this, but we also talk about just know that your choices affect more people than just yourself. And so don't be naive enough to think that if you choose to be sexually active, that it's only affecting you, because it's not, you know, you can't do anything where it only affects you. Your decisions always have a ripple effect with other people around you. And so and obviously there are some students that totally love and appreciate our message, and some students that are like, I totally disagree. But we teach about so many different consequences from actions. And so we always have a goal setting lesson where we teach them just how to think through their decisions and how to think through the potential consequences and how to make a good choice and things like that. We do like goals where they track their goals every time we go in there, so they can like know how to keep a goal in front of them to know whether or not they're accomplishing those things. And so we go through lots of different topics and things like that as well. And there are some students that are like, why can't we just learn how to use a condom? And we're like, because you can still get an STI even if you use a condom, you know? And so don't think that those, and you can still have heartache if you use a condom. You can still ruin your reputation even if you used a condom, you know. And so just trying to help them understand that there is like an ideal out there, and so that's what we teach.
That's awesome. And I'm thankful for what you're doing and for just the ministry of Alive and Well. That is just definitely so needed right now. And it's our job as parents to be having these conversations in the home. Like, as amazing as it is that you are doing what you're doing, the reality is these conversations need to be happening with our own children. And that's kind of, I think, the point where we're going to transition to and dive into is, how can we as parents begin these conversations, these awkward conversations
yes.
with our, right? Because that's scary. And there's so many unknowns to it. Like, okay, well, how do I bring it up? Or like, at what age, you know? How do we even begin to have these conversations? So I'm just curious to hear from you, just your advice, what you've learned, your wisdom on this.
Do you want me to start with my story of how,
yes.
I know, you know, this super embarrassing story about my parenting journey, but my kids were 3 and 5 when I was listening to a parenting podcast, or actually wasn't, it was a personal development podcast. Zig Ziglar was talking, and in his talk, he had a side conversation about, if you're a parent, you need to be having the sex talk with your children. And he progressed to say, you need to have the conversation with your preschool children, to which I was like, what? Like, I have preschool children and I've never thought about talking to them about this stuff. So he gave this recommendation to this book, And it was written in like the 50s, because I think the podcast I was listening to was recorded like 30 years before I was listening to it. And so it was old. And I was looking all over for the book. It's not in print anymore. I found it on eBay. I bought it. And I like did so many things that nobody should do, but this is just what I did. So I didn't tell my husband I was doing this. Like, for one, our marriage was not the greatest at this point of our lives. And so our communication was not the best. So that's part of the reason why I didn't run this by him. And he was working a lot, so I didn't see him very much, which is not an excuse, but that's just what happened, you know? And then also, I was so nervous about doing it that I was like, if I proofread this book, I'm probably going to talk myself out of it. So I trust this speaker. So I just literally got the book in the mail, opened the package and said, kids, we got a new book. Let's sit on the couch and read it together. So I'm reading this book and it's like this story of this mom and dad, and the mom had just given birth to twins and she was getting ready to bring the twins home. And the older brother and sister had questions about the babies. And so throughout the book, the dad explains how babies are conceived, and then he explains how the mother went through the whole birth process and explains all of that. And then the kids walk in and they see the mom changing the diapers. So then they explain the difference between boys and girls. And then they see the mom nursing, and then it explains the mom nursing. And I'm literally like reading this book, and I was not mentally prepared to like go into all of this with my children on that day. And I'm sweating. Like, I just have sweat just pouring down the back of my back. And my husband walks in the door, and I didn't know he was coming home right then. he walks in and he just looks at me and he's like, what are you reading? And I'm like, I'll explain to you later. And then the kids like picked up on our tension and they just started dying laughing and they thought it was so funny. So then he goes in the other room. I finish the book. I go in the other room and I am like, you know, huge, I'm sweating so much. And he's like, all I know is I walk in from work and you're talking about a uterus. And like, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was like so traumatizing to me, you know? But what was astonishing to me is my children don't even remember it. Like, they don't remember the book. They don't remember sitting on the couch reading it together. They don't remember my husband coming in. Would you? Yeah. And like, to Todd and I, that was like a huge landmark moment in our life. And it wasn't to them. And I think that's how it is a lot of times. And we've since found much more culturally acceptable books that are more up to speed of like our day and age. And so now I recommend to people the series called God's Design for Sex. And it does start at age 3, but it has 3 to 5 is the first book. And then I think 5 to 8, 8 to 12, and then 12 to 15, I think, are the different age groups for the 4 books. And you can go on Amazon, you can buy all 4 books together. And we have found so much value going through those books with our children. Let me tell you why we found so much value. First is because I believe, especially being the Alive and Well teacher. So one of the things we do in Alive and Well is we teach the puberty lesson to 5th graders and then again to 6th graders as well. And when we teach the puberty lesson, we always tell them that you're going to have questions and you should talk to your trustworthy adults about whatever questions that you have. And it astonishes me how many students say, oh, my mom would never talk to me about this. And I don't talk to boys, so I don't know what boys say, but I know pretty much every school I'm at, there is a handful of girls that are telling me, well, I can't talk to my mom about this. And I don't think it's because the mom won't talk to them about it. I could be wrong. Maybe there are moms out there that just won't talk to their kids about it. But I think it's because the mom never brought it up. And our kids are waiting for us to bring it up. Like, we are the adults in the relationship, you know? And so we should be the ones starting these conversations. And in my opinion, as awkward as our kids think that they are, I think it's way worse for the adult. Like, I think that I am way more embarrassed about a lot of these things than my kids are, you know, especially when they're three. And that's the other thing is my kids, until they hit middle school and their friends started acting all weird about stuff, they didn't even know to be embarrassed about this stuff until their friends started being embarrassed about it, you know? And so it just kind of became part of our family's conversations. And what was crazy to me was in the 5 to 8 book of God's Design for Sex, we were reading it with our kids, and it shows a man and a woman in a bed together. And I mean, you don't see anything, but you're insinuating that they don't have clothes on, because I think you see their shoulders or something out of the sheets. And it says something about a husband and wife being married and how that's how God designed it. And my son, who was in first grade, said, well, unless it's a husband and a husband who are married. And we were like, what do you mean? And he said, well, like, this kid at recess told me that his uncle just married another man. And we were not prepared to have the homosexual conversation with our first grader, you know? And that would have been something that I would have thought, okay, by the time my kids are in 4th or 5th grade, I should probably have a conversation with them about it. Well, if he would have heard about it in first grade and thought that was totally normal, and then I don't talk to him until 5th grade, he's had 4 formative years of his life totally normalizing this behavior. Mm-hmm. And I haven't spoken any sort of worldview to him if I would have waited. And that was the thing that we were not. Even when we started reading these books, we had no idea all of the things that hung in the balance of us opening up these conversations with our kids. And I will tell you, my daughter in 4th grade, one of her best friends started hitting on her in 4th grade. Oh. And yes, right? 4th grade. And during that time, she got really quiet. She stopped doing her hair. She really isolated herself from us. And we kept asking what was going on. And then finally, she shows us this letter where her friend is asking her, what are we? And I'm like, well, what do you think she meant by this? And she's like, I think she's asking if we're dating. And I was like, what? Like, are you sure? And she's like, yes, mom, trust me. She's asking if we're dating. And Todd and I looked at each other and we were like, what if we hadn't been telling them truth for the last 2 years? And what if for the last 2 years, our daughter just thought it was totally normal. And then someone who she's really close to starts hitting on her. Like, what would she have done? You know? Yeah. And so I am so thankful that that book brought about these conversations that we weren't going to have, you know, and that we thought we had plenty of time to have those conversations, and come to find out we didn't. And those books exposed those things to us and exposed the types of things that our kids were facing on a daily basis that we didn't even know about at the time. And so that ended up being a huge, huge blessing, unintended blessing from reading those books, was just being able to open up those conversations with our children really early on.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of scary. You know, they live in such a different day and age than we did. My daughter, when I did the puberty talk to her grade, there was a boy who identifies as a girl that was in with the girls for the puberty talk. And I remember like thinking, You don't have a uterus. Like, what are you getting from this? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I'm not trying to judge him, but it's just like our kids are growing up in such a different day and age than we are, you know, and they're facing such different obstacles.
Right. And I know you talked about these books. I'm super curious about them. I'll have to look them up on Amazon. It sounds like they've been fantastic tools. Okay, let's say somebody didn't have the books. Like, let's just pretend those aren't there for the sake of the argument here for a minute. What do you think, or like, how is a good way to engage our kids with that and with that topic? And also, like, should both parents be involved, or should it be, is it better if it's like the dads talk to the sons, moms talk to the daughters? Like,
that's a good question.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I'm going to tell you my opinion. I don't know. I don't really have scientific evidence to back this up, but this is just my opinion and what's worked for us. I know you said pretend there's no books. I think the books are extremely valuable tools, because then the parents don't get on a soapbox. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Because it's very, I'm an instructor. And so I have like a whole hour where the kids just have to sit there and like, listen, and I'm interactive, but still I'm like, I can get on a soapbox really, really easily. And the books force you not to do that. And what's really cool is starting at age 9, the 9 to 12-year-old book actually is conversational. So then the kids, it's almost like a play, like it's written like a play. And so there's 4 characters in the play, and everybody in the family reads a different character's like whatever they're saying or whatever. And what I thought was super valuable about that was that my daughter was hearing my husband say these truths just as much as I was saying the truths from the mom's perspective. My kids were getting used to say anatomically appropriate ways to refer to things, and they were having to read them from the book, and it helped to normalize like these conversations, so that instead of them just listening to us, they were actually participating in it, which was super helpful. Outside of the books, I had advice given to me when my kids were young, and I try really hard, because like I said, I am a soapbox girl, and my parents were soapbox parents, you know, and so that's my go-to, and I know it's not effective, but that's, you know, what I default to. And someone gave me the advice when my children were young that 10 5-minute conversations are much more effective than one 50-minute conversation is. And I remember when they said that to me, I was like, huh. And they said, you don't got to go all into a topic in one setting. You just need to sprinkle these ideas and these truths throughout lots of different conversations. And they said, this way, your kids won't zone you out when you start talking, because if you have a 50-minute conversation, they're going to be like, oh, I hate it when mom or dad or whatever talks to me about this, and I glaze over and I don't pay attention, you know? And if they know, well, she's just going to say this one thing and then she'll be done, then they might actually listen to what you're saying. And they said, if you just do these 10 5-minute conversations, when your kid is ready to talk about it, then they will ask questions, but you're not forcing them to talk about it before they're ready, which I thought was also super helpful. So for our family, what we've done is we have the books as like the starting point. And like I said, there's only one book every like 3 or 4 years. So it's not like this is a constant conversation. And it's not even like the books are enough to do all of it. They just open up the door to start having conversations with your children, you know? And so, but the thing I did like about the 9 to 12 book is that when we read it, or I don't even remember the ages, when we read the third book, it took us probably a month to read it. And we would just read a little bit every night for a month. And it was super great, because it was like constantly bringing these truths into our kids' minds. It brought up all sorts of topics. I mean, it brought up the appropriate, why we don't watch inappropriate movies and why we don't look at pornography and like a whole bunch of stuff outside of just the anatomy of a boy and a girl and things like that. And then the other thing that I have realized is that girls, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but girls enjoy face-to-face conversations where boys enjoy side-to-side conversations. And so
yes,
something that I can talk to my daughter about and take her to coffee and like sit and have a conversation, my husband will need to be like playing basketball with my son to have the same conversation, or like go mountain biking together or go hiking together or do something so that they're not looking at each other. Cause there's some, and it's the same way for my husband. Like my husband isn't going to open up to me over coffee. Like we need to go on a walk, or we need to like, he needs to be working on something in the house or something, doing something to be able to open up to me, you know? And so I think just remembering that, but for our family, the books have been helpful for all of us to know, hey, you can talk to any of us about any of these things. But then when it comes to girl specific things and boy specific things, my husband will talk to my son and I talk to my daughter. And I think there's a lot of value if there's somebody listening that doesn't have a spouse and they're like, no, I'm the only one. Right. You don't need to be the only one, you know, like there, it doesn't have to be a parent that can be the trustworthy adult, because there are a lot of things that it's like a guy can't tell a girl what it's like to be on their period, you know, like, and a girl can't tell a guy what it's like to have a wet dream. Like those are just, you have to have that conversation with your gender, you know? And so I just think there's a lot of value in finding someone, you know, a grandpa, an uncle, an aunt, a neighbor, a teacher, a small group leader, somebody that could be that trustworthy adult if you don't have your spouse that would be willing to do that, you know?
Yeah, that's such a good point. And yeah, I love that you also brought in just the sprinkling idea too. That is encouraging to me. And yeah, I'm like sitting over here thinking like, oh, I probably do have those soapbox moments, you know. So that's definitely a good.
Yes. I mean, not that we're ever perfect, but it's like the ideal of like knowing, okay, the ideal is don't get on a soapbox. But every once in a while, my husband will be like, all right, Mom, alive and well teacher, get off the soapbox.
That's so good and so encouraging. I just appreciate you sharing from your personal experiences too. I know just, you know, we have kids pretty much the same age, you know, 13, and both our sons are going to be 11 next month, which is crazy.
Yes. But yes.
Like how this has gone in my house has been so different between the two, you know, and it's like, my daughter was so curious. She wanted to know everything at such a young age. Her kindergarten teacher was pregnant. So like, she wanted to know it all, you know? And so with her, it was like this really great unfolding progression, you know, from like kindergarten through like the summer before fourth grade, I would say, like between like that time period, it's like kind of everything unfolded about all of the biology and all about sex. Like, you know, she just had this curiosity and it was just like, it kind of built on each other, you know, over time, which was really fantastic. And we've had a lot of really great conversations about those topics. My son, on the other hand, it's like he could care less. And like literally no questions. He never brings it up. You know, there's definitely been times we've tried to kind of bring it up or, you know, ask about certain elements of, you know, within the topic of sex or sexuality or just, you know, babies, like literally no questions this kid has. And so it's like, okay, how long do you, you know, because it's like, okay, we don't want to push it if he's not, I don't say ready to hear it, but you know what I mean? Like he is perfectly content to play Xbox and talk with his, or, you know, play basketball with his princess. Like his, you know what I mean? It's like girls are not on his radar whatsoever.
Yeah.
Or at least that he lets on.
Yeah. Oh, my son either. He like, this is the first year he's even known a girl's name in his class. And he's like, well, she's been in my class since first grade. I should know her name. And we're like, yeah, but you've never known a girl's name before. So it's kind of a big deal. So I think, because to be honest, my daughter never had questions until she started her period. She didn't have questions about her period. She was just like, oh, mom, I don't need to know this, you know? And like, and then, and I even told her, hey, you're going to get to, when we started reading the books to our kids, we told them it's not your job to educate your friends about this information. You know, we said, if your friends start talking about this, your appropriate response should be, that's a great question for your mom, or that's a great question for your dad. You, even if you know the answers, you don't need to tell them the answers, you know. But neither of our kids had that natural curiosity that you're describing with Noelle. I think that her having that curiosity just showed that she was ready for those conversations. But I don't think my kids' lack of curiosity meant that they weren't ready for it. I just think that I don't know if they weren't curious enough to ask about it. I don't know if they like didn't care enough to ask about it. I don't really know. But I know anytime we read those, that's why I am such a backbone of like the books, is because I think the books are super helpful. Because I know for myself, I was like, what's age appropriate? Like, how do I know what's too far? And I don't want to ruin their innocence. I don't want to gross them out. I don't want them to make them not ever come to me again, you know? And the books are just written in very age appropriate ways. That's super helpful, so that you can just read the book. It takes all the awkwardness out of them. And even for a boy, you're not looking at each other. You're just looking at the book, you know what I mean? You don't have to like stare at each other. And so you can get all of the conversations out of the way. And then that way, you know, okay, they are learning this information. And this is just a side note. Some of my friends were dragging their feet and not talking to their kids about these things. And we know two different kids who unintentionally found pornography in elementary school because they heard a word at recess that they didn't know what it was. And what do kids in this day and age do when they hear words that they don't know what it is? They ask Siri. They Google it. They look up YouTube videos on it, and they ask Siri. And so then, all of a sudden, one girl, actually, by the time her parents found out, she was borderline addicted to pornography, and she was in elementary school. And her parents were like worried that there was something wrong with her, and were like, I highly doubt there's something wrong with her. She just was curious and didn't know where to turn, and then found these images and then like strangely enjoyed looking at them and didn't know what to do with that and didn't know it was not good to look at. And so kept doing it, you know, and we're like, she's not gross. She just needs to have a conversation about it, you know? And so I do think that's the value in starting those things, especially before they go to school, you know, and because you don't know what kids are going to say at recess at school. And so just having those conversations early, reading those books, I'm a huge proponent in the books just because they help with the age appropriateness and help the kid that's never going to ask a single question, and it gets the stuff out of the way that they need to know, so that you know you're at least covering the basis for them.
Yeah, that's so good. I appreciate you sharing that. Yes. It's such a good point that, yeah, just because they don't ask doesn't mean they're not ready.
Well, and my son, he just naturally connects with his peers more, like, than maybe our daughter would. You know, she naturally connects with adults, and he naturally connects with his peers. And so because of that, if she has a question, she'll ask us. If he has a question, he'll probably ask his friend, you know? And so trying to be proactive so that he's not going to have a question about these topics. You know what I mean? It's kind of, that's been our philosophy of like answer the question before he has the question. So that way he doesn't get misinformed or we're not fighting against a worldview that he's unintentionally created for himself that we didn't even know about, you know?
Yeah, that's really good. Really good. I'm so glad we're talking about this. Okay, so I'm going to share a funny story. So like I said, my daughter was super curious in kindergarten. And like, I just remember it so clearly. Like she was at the kitchen table. I was making dinner. I was probably chopping something. And she was like asking me about how babies were born. You know, she said, okay, so they like come out of the tummy, right? Like come out of their mom's stomach. And I was like, well, she was like the doctor cuts them open. And, you know, I was like, yes, because I didn't want to like, you know, I want to be honest with her. So I was like, yes, that's one way. And she's like, oh, well, I want to know all the ways that babies can be born. And I just kind of remember looking at her and I'm just like, oh, Noelle, I don't know. I really do want to know all of the ways. And again, I was just kind of like, and she's like, Mom, I promise I won't freak out. So I was
and like, then you tell her and she's like, okay, so I'm going to the bathroom. Like, I don't want to know anymore.
No, this was her reaction. So we had an anatomy lesson, right? That was the first thing, which I think that was just as surprising as anything else, you know, learning the anatomy. So she then knew how babies were born. And then she just kind of took it in and she was like, okay, well, how do cats have their babies? And I said, well, the same way all mammals have their babies the same way. And she just goes, oh, that's really interesting. Like that was it.
But you know what? You know what I love about that conversation is because you were willing to have a conversation that you were not ready to have, like you had not mentally prepared yourself for it. And she, and you know, our kids thrust these conversations on us at the worst times. You know, it's like, I'm trying to get out the door and they like drop a bomb and you're like, yes. What? Like I'm making dinner right now. Like this is not the time to have an anatomy lesson. But when we show them that we will be respectful and we're not going to lie to them. We're not going to tell them there's a stork somewhere in the sky that just drops a baby down. Well, what this family that wants to get pregnant and why didn't the stork go to them? Oh, he got lost. Like what? Like that makes no sense. You know what I mean? And when our kids know that we're telling them things that don't make any sense, they're going to stop coming to us with their questions.
Yes.
And yes. And the further I go in my parenting, the more I'm realizing number one top priority is I have to be a safe place for my kids to come and ask a question. And so what I am trying to continually remind myself of is if I'm lecturing them, I'm not a safe place for them to ask a question to. If I am shaming them, I'm not a safe place for them to come and ask a question to, you know, and I'm realizing that the more I can just keep the lines of communication with us open, like the better we're going to navigate through the teenage years and all these things. And I really think that's the point of starting these conversations early is you're communicating to your children that they can come to you even about embarrassing topics and that you're a safe place. And even if they feel weird about something that you're not going to be weird about it, you know?
Yeah, that's so good, Julie. And I think you're right about giving them honest answers. Okay. So I'll continue with how that conversation progressed because I think it taps into exactly that. So as that conversation was going, the one I just shared about, she asked, now, do you have to be married to have a baby? And I know so many parents who, if their six-year-old asked them that, they would say, oh yes, absolutely. You need to be married, you know, because they want, that's what they want for their kids. But I didn't want to do that. I wasn't, like I said, I don't want to lie to her. And so I wanted to know what she thought. So before I answered, I said, well, what do you think? And she kind of thought about it. She's like, well, I don't think you have to be. And I said, okay, well, why do you think that? And she said, well, because Kenley told me, one of her friends. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, is she right? And I said, yeah, she's right. But that's a topic for another day, or that's a conversation we can have when you're a little bit older, you know? So and that's kind of where the conversation ended that day. But I didn't want to lie to her, and I wanted to know what she thought first before I gave my response. Because I think there's a lot of damage that we unintentionally do when we don't give honest answers, like right. Historic or, you know.
Nicole, I will say that that's the one thing that you as a counselor have a leg up on all us, especially as teachers, you know, like I'm a teacher. I went for music education. So I'm an educator. So like when my kids ask a question, my first natural tendency is sit down and I'm going to teach you a lesson about your question, you know, and I love And it's yes. not effective. Like it might be effective when they're in preschool, not effective for a tween and a teen. And it is progressively, the older they get, I am having a harder and harder time being an effective parent because I have to continually go against my natural impulses of just teaching them everything. But I love that because you're a counselor, that your first response was, what do you think of that? Because that is what I'm trying to learn how to respond to my kids. That's my number one thing I'm working on in my parenting is by responding by, what do you think of that? Because if anything, it buys me time to calm my emotions down before I overreact about something, you know? but I just love that you answered that. And I will say, cause the books talk about I keep going back to the books, but I just love the books. I think they're so helpful to have these awkward conversations with your kids. But one of the things I like about it is even in the books, they say, well, people can have a baby outside of marriage, but even though it's possible, it's not the way that God designed it, you know? And I loved that picture of from like day one, teaching them the ideal, teaching them the goal, you know? And if they don't, and especially in our culture, I mean, the amount of shows on Disney Plus that our kids aren't allowed to watch because they're sexualized. Of like is astonishing. It seems like Disney Plus should be like free reign. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're a tween. You can watch anything you want on there. And it's not because there are so many inappropriate shows out there, you know, let alone, I mean, you just watch the commercials on Hulu and it's like, all right, we have to have a conversation about every single one of these commercials that we just watched on here, you know? And so I just feel like we have such a sexualized culture that they are getting these messages so much earlier than we did, which means they're going to have so many more questions. They have to have their shield up way faster than we did when we were their age, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a really important question that, you know, we have to ask, for this episode is, you know, how do we as parents teach our kids, no matter what age they are, to have wisdom and discernment and, you know, knowing God's purpose for sex while also teaching them to have responses that are compassionate and loving with their, you know, friends or peers who might make different sexual choices?
Yeah, this is hard across the board, right? Like for some reason, our culture has no problem loving the kid who has a swearing problem. Our kids have no problem loving a kid who cheats mm-hmm. on tests. You know, like for some reason, even though those are sins and they know they're not right, those feel like forgivable sins. And maybe they feel forgivable because maybe our kids are tempted with those things. And so they don't seem as big of a deal to them. But right now we're actually working with our daughter about that. She needs to love a homosexual, you know, and I think part of it is because of her trauma of mm-hmm. being hit on by one of her best friends in fourth grade. I think that her defense mechanism yeah. went up and now she like, I don't want to say she hates that demographic, but that's something that we're definitely working on of like, whoa, that sounded a little judgmental over there. You know, like let's back the train up. Like, yeah, they're not living in the way that we think they should, but that doesn't mean that like, why aren't you saying these things about the kid who says bad words? Or why aren't you saying these things about and trying to just help her understand that like, and help her understand number one, well, they're not Christians. So why would you expect them to have the same moral compass as you? You know, like they don't have the same worldview. They don't have the same starting point. Their opinion is totally different than yours. And so you can't have the same expectation on them as you do on yourself, you know, for number one. And so that goes for people who are making the risky sexual decisions as well. And then number two, is also just helping them to understand like that a sin is a sin. And to God, a sin is what takes us away from God. And it doesn't matter if they cheat on a test or they say a bad word or they are making risky sexual decisions. A sin is a sin is a sin, you know? And so if it's all the same to God, why are we making it different, you know? And that has been a very hard thing for especially my almost 13-year-old to grasp, you know, is like, no, they're not the same. And she's like ranking sins. And it's like, no, like we want to do that because we want to make ourselves feel better than other people, but we have to be saved by grace and they have to be saved by grace. And right now they don't want to be saved by grace, but, and this is something that we've tried to help her understand is just trying to help them understand where those people are coming from. And so, for example, someone who's making risky sexual decisions, they are needing to feel loved. And they're looking for it in all the wrong ways, but, and they're doing it in an unhealthy way, but that's why they're making the decisions they're making is because they're trying to feel loved and accepted. And the statistics for, people in the LGBTQ community to actually become Christians are crazy high, crazy high. But unfortunately, most Christians don't even invite them to church. They don't invite them to anything. And it's like a lot of times they're wanting community and they're being rejected from everybody. And so then they find each other. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, if we can accept them and we can love them for who they are and we can bring them, like they might find a saving relationship with Jesus just the same way that you did. And so I think for our kids, which is something that, you know, all of us have to try to do, is trying to not see just the sin, but trying to see the person, you know, and my prayer for people that are difficult for me to get along with is just like, I pray every morning, like, Lord, help me to see them the way that you see them. Because when God looks at us, he doesn't just see our sin. You know what I mean? Like he sees a person worth dying for. Like he sees a person worth sacrificing for. And a lot of times when we look at other people, all we see is the things that they're doing wrong rather than seeing them as a person.
That's so good. And so true.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Again, just your willingness to share, you know, like, yeah, that's something that is real that you guys are talking with your kids. And I know we've had, you know, similar conversations, especially concerning LGBTQ population and just in general, people who are making different choices than us. I remember even when our kids were little, man, they got on this big thing about like anytime they'd see somebody smoking, they would like point it out and like say how bad it was. And it's just like, so even then that was like, okay, yes, they shouldn't smoke, but you know, that's some people do that and it's hard to quit. And we need to have that understanding, but that doesn't mean that they're these awful, terrible, evil people that we have to avoid at all costs, you know, so.
It's interesting to think about when we were kids. I mean, everywhere you went, everybody was smoking, I feel like, when we were kids, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there was like a smoking section in Pizza Hut, you know?
Yes, exactly. And just to realize, wow, our kids are growing up and they've never seen a smoking section in a restaurant. And if they walked into a restaurant and saw someone smoking, they would be like, what are you doing? Like, this is a restaurant. You know what I mean? And like, it's just so easy to see how much worse things are than when we were kids. And sometimes I feel like it's really hard to see, oh, there are things that have improved.
Well, I have just appreciated this conversation so much. I know it's given me a lot to think about with my own kids and just even for my job, you know what I mean? Like how I talk to, you know, other people about, you know, what we were talking about today. It's hugely helpful. So I so appreciate you, Julie, and I'm excited for your work with Alive and Well. And I know you're doing great things there.
Thank you. Yeah. And I, you know, I never really intended to be the one that was like the sex expert. That wasn't really like what I wanted for my life, I guess, you know, it wasn't on my vision board or anything like that, but, it has been funny to see, you know, God has a sense of humor and he will, you know, something that I knew I was passionate about that, then I found out all the high school students, like call me the sex lady at school. The campus life director told me they don't even know my name. They just know, oh, it's the sex lady. And so I'm like, well, you know, everybody's got to have a reputation. Yeah. So it's just now that I'm like, okay, I've realized this is something that I'm weirdly kind of an expert about, which I didn't really mean to become one. I just accidentally became one, you know? And, but I also am realizing, okay, God, one of my friends jokes that I love awkward conversations. And I'm like, well, maybe that's how I became the Alive and Well teacher, is that I embrace the awkward, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. No, I feel like this has been a great episode.
Yeah. But thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, so before we close out today, I know Kat, you have a great verse for us, but let's just acknowledge that Julie does have a great podcast called Parenting Tomorrow's Leaders. And although it's kind of on pause right now, it's still active. And if you want to look that up where you usually get your podcast, you can go back and listen. So many great episodes. I may or may not have been a guest on that.
Yes, podcast. You were.
But we'll also link Julie's episodes where she did go into a little bit more detail about some of the books that she was talking about. But just, it's a great podcast. And I just love the title, Parenting Tomorrow's Leaders. Like, yes, that's amazing. So just again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time.
Yes, this was such a fun episode. Like, I laughed and smiled so much that like my cheeks hurt, guys. Like, that's how you know this was a good episode. So, all right. But today's Bible verse comes from 2 Timothy 2:21, and it says, "Those who cleanse themselves will be instruments for special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work."